You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Jerry DePoto will join me coming up in a half hour for our weekly conversation. I'm sure he's been watching the baseball postseason, which has been really good this year. A lot of fun games, a lot of great players rising to the occasion. So we'll talk to Jerry about that and what he learns as he watches those teams and what his team's got to do in order to get there and be there next year. So Jerry DePoto coming up in a half hour here on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. Right now, Joe Fan joins me, was here in Seattle for quite some time, local guy, but now the Bet to Win podcast, living in Las Vegas. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hey, Mike, it's an honor to bat leadoff for Jerry DePoto. This is exciting for me. How are you doing, man?
Well, it's more like an opening act, I would say. Like, I mean, Jerry's more the, he's the headliner. You're sort of an opening act for Jerry. Does that work?
Hey, I will take that. That's okay. I'm fine with that. I know my lane, and I'm happy to play my role.
All right, good. Well, I want to talk to you about Jamal Adams and the Seahawks. We're going to do that in a minute, but I've got two other things we've got to talk about first, both of which have come up in your life in the last couple of days. First of all, you got hit in the shoulder by a Brooks Koepka drive. You've got to tell me the story. What happened?
So I'm standing on three, and the way this course works, it just didn't make sense to walk down to the tee box and walk all the way back.
So, all right, so this is like, at the Shriners?
This is at the Shriners Open, yep.
Okay, so he was playing, and you were in the crowd.
He was playing. I was in the crowd, yes. This is it's a par, long par four, and I'm on the right side of the fairway. I'm looking down. I'm so far away. I can't see the ball come off the club, but I'm just looking at the guy with the stick who kind of tells you like where it's headed. And he's waving this thing like straight up and down, like which means it's straight. And so I just kind of I stopped paying attention because it's going to be down the middle. At the last second, one of the guys inside the ropes goes 4-4-4. And I turn. And at the last second, it was bang, bang. The second I turn, it smokes me on the fly in my shoulder.
Jeez.
I mean, 6 inches from knocking me in the back of the head. And
wow.
I mean, I'm kind of in shock for a second. I was like, oh my goodness, I just got hit with a Brooks Koepka drive. Everyone comes over, medics come over. Everyone's like, dude, are you good? Where'd it hit you? And he's like, this is actually kind of cool because you're okay. But also like Brooks is going to come say what's up.
And so wait, hold on. Yeah, I got a question or two for, hold on. I got a question. Scale of 1 to 10. I've never been hit by a golf ball. I have almost hit people with golf balls, but I've never been hit myself. How, scale of 1 to 10, how much does it hurt getting hit with that golf ball?
I got lucky that it hit me in, like, the meat of my back as opposed to, like, right on the bone of my shoulder blade. So as far as it could have been, I got very – as bad as it could have been, I got very lucky. Imagine if you were to, like, take your fist and punch yourself in the thigh or your leg as hard as you could, that's about as bad as it hurt.
It's like a dead arm? Like, somebody punches you in the shoulder like a dead arm, that kind of a pain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
All right. I get
so
it.
So he comes up and everyone's like, dude, you hit this guy. And one of the guys inside the ropes, the one that yelled four, like goes up to him and his caddy and is like, hey, you just hit that guy. And you want to make sure he's just all good. Give him a thumbs up or whatever. Dude doesn't flinch. He may as well have said, good, I was aiming for that guy. He goes and hits his ball. He makes par. My shoulder knocks this ball. It's going out of bounds into the desert. It goes 15 yards back towards the fairway. He makes par on the hole. And I'm like annoyed at this point. I'm like, why did you be a normal human being? I walk all the way out. I'm at the green. He's walking off the green. I said, hey, Brooks, can I get some love for my shoulder helping you save par? And he just walks right by.
Wow.
Didn't even flinch.
So you're Team Bryson.
So
now.
I didn't expect to make an enemy out of Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
He's on my list now. So,
I'm not
surprised. Team Bryson all the way.
I'm not surprised by any of that. All right. And then secondly, you were at the opening night for the Kraken the other night. You got to be in the building, right, in Vegas because you're living there. What was the vibe in Vegas for the Kraken?
It was incredible. I mean, the whole setup, I mean, I can't wait to see what Client Pledge Arena is like when it's fully done and they build around it in terms of bars and restaurants. But I'm not sure if you've ever been to LA Live by Staples Center.
Sure.
But it's basically kind of a collection of bars, restaurants, there's music going. It's a lively atmosphere before a game or after a game. That's exactly what they have. I mean, this arena is right off the strip, but there's all these bars and restaurants. They've got DJs going and there were a ton of Kraken jerseys. It was packed. It was an awesome vibe. It felt like a playoff atmosphere. Everyone's just kind of raging, drinking, eating, and then you go in, and they put on one heck of a show in that arena. And it's full Vegas in terms of how they blow it out. And it was an awesome time. You know, I think for me, it's like you forget, you see these new colors, new team, and you kind of feel like they're this little Giants underdog team. And then you forget that these are professionals that have been in the NHL for years and years. And so, you know, they almost scored right out of the gate. I mean, the first 30 seconds, like they had three shots on goal and ended up getting a penalty out of it. But, and then the battle back and tied at three, and you lose on what I think all of us would agree is a kind of a phony goal. But it was a ton of fun. And I think everyone should be really fired up that this thing's getting going here. And I can't wait to see what it looks like in Seattle when they finally get to play a home game.
No, I won't get into it, but I don't agree. I think that's a perfectly legitimate goal. So don't worry about me. I'm just over here by myself. And
I'd rather be upset about it, Mike.
Sure.
Right?
Okay.
I'm a Seattle sports
fan. There we go.
I'd rather blame the refs.
It's better to blame the refs than the fact that the guy made a nice play and that your top defenseman literally couldn't have put a pass better on the stick of the Vegas Knight player in order to set up that goal. So, yeah, I think I'm going to blame Adam Larson more than I'm going to blame the refs on that one. But Joe Fan with me here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I mean, that's 7 minutes of good stuff on the Kraken and on you getting hit by Brooks Koepka. But I wanted to talk to you about Jamal Adams because obviously you guys had your battle last year. He called you Mr. Joe. You would question some of his coverage skills. And then when he had a good day, he went back at you. What have you seen so far from Jamal Adams this year?
It hasn't been good. It hasn't been good at all. And I think there's a number of layers you can look at. Are you saying, A, everyone who said a box safety is not worth this kind of money being proved right? Or B, people saying that Jamal Adams himself is not worth that kind of money are feeling like they've been proven right? Or C, why can't they figure out how to use this guy to take advantage of his skill set? Because he was a second-team All-Pro last year. His last year with the Jets, he was first team all pro and he was capable in coverage. Look at the PFF grades and everything else. While the interceptions weren't there, you know, he wasn't a liability. And I think you've seen this year, he's been a liability. And it's a red flag when this is year two of this and you've now traded two first round picks and given away the richest contract in safety history. And Pete Carroll is telling reporters that they're still trying to figure out the best way to use him. How is that possible? And so, yes, I think everyone should be very concerned about, you know, the money and the investment they've put into this guy and the little return they're getting. It's what, five games in, and he doesn't have a splash play yet or the big game-changing moments that you expect from your superstars. And that's just not good enough. It's looking like a massive waste of resources unless things, you know, completely turn around and he figures it out.
It's interesting that you go there. I mean, I actually have some faith that he will turn that around. I think he's a really good player, and I liked the trade, and I advocated for the money spent. I don't think they had a choice after they had given up the resources. But the other question then becomes, you know, just a little bit ahead of him on the field, a little in front of him, is Bobby Wagner, who also got the huge contract. What have you seen from Bobby so far?
Yeah, the tackles are there, obviously, but I think you have to dive into that number and say, how productive are those tackles? I mean, it's the same thing with Jamal Adams. If you're tackling a guy after a first down, it's not really one to be celebrated. I think Bobby Wagner is still a very good player. I don't think he's the elite, top-of-the-game defensive player that he once was. I once actually asked him this question because I was curious about it, you know, with tackles, like how much should you take tackles into consideration? And he said, you don't get 10 tackles by accident, meaning like that's a game that should be celebrated no matter what. Now, you know, there's probably not no matter what there, you know, if you're giving up 40 points, whatever. But I do think that, you know, his instincts are still very much there. I just don't think he's a guy who's carrying a defense the way he once did. I think that contract, especially in Bobby's case, is much more of a lifetime achievement contract. And a guy, again, you can't go into a season without Bobby Wagner. So it's either you pay him or you don't. And you know, he's going to hold out or potentially ask for him to be moved elsewhere. You said they didn't have an option with Jamal Adams. I totally agree. I'm not sure they had much of an option with Bobby either. But as you continue to look down the road of what's ahead, okay, what does his tenure look like in Seattle as this thing continues to go? Do they ask him to restructure this next offseason?
Right.
I don't think you can go down the list of why this is a fascinating time in this current era of Seahawks football, because there's a lot that could change.
Well, and you mentioned it's a really good point you make about it being more of a lifetime achievement contract. That's fine. You can give out lifetime achievement contracts to players that are still okay, but maybe not worth what they're making. as long as you have an equivalent number of players outplaying their rookie contracts, right? Guys who are making up the difference of what you've added to Bobby, Jamal, et cetera. And I guess that's the last question is, how many guys are doing that, especially on the defensive side?
Daryl Taylor.
Okay.
Probably the one. You could probably say Alton Robinson as well. But that's the great point is, I mean, there's too much invested in this defense, draft capital-wise, free agent dollars-wise, via trade, all of that, for it to be comprehensively poor. You know, and that's what I think is so baffling. And that's why, you know, you could say the Jamal Adams trade was a desperation move because of their poor drafts and their lack of young talent that are outplaying their contract.
Mm-hmm.
Their poor drafts, and they've had a string of them, have really caught up to this team. And I think that's why you're seeing that, you know, their best players are overpriced veterans as opposed to up and coming young stars that are still on rookie deals.
It's good stuff. Joe, good to talk to you. Joe Fan, you can catch him on the Bet to Win podcast. That's WYNN, named after, well, Steve, but also the hotel that he built there. Good stuff, Joe. Good to talk to you, man. Keep enjoying Vegas. We'll talk soon.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for having me.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Joe's good. I really like the perspective Joe brings, the energy he brings to covering sports. Great on Twitter, social media, et cetera. So a good follow there, Joe Fan. It's a good point. I love that description as being a contract awarded for lifetime achievement rather than for future achievement. In general, it's hard to do that, right? You've got to be really cold-blooded in the NFL and make sure that you're rewarding people for what they're going to do, not for just what they have done. So you got to be really careful with who you decide to sign and for how much, because you don't want to get stuck in the position he just said, where your best players or the biggest names on your team are these older players that have already kind of done what they did in the NFL and the best years aren't in front of them. You've got to find a good mix there. I don't think they could have let Bobby Wagner go at the time they did. There was a void of leadership, and they needed to transition out of Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Cliff Avril, right? All those guys that had either gotten hurt or moved on for various reasons. But you look at it today, and in order to deal with the fact that Bobby, who's not bad, but maybe isn't playing at the same level as he once was, who is outplaying the contract they're on? And I think you could say Daryl Taylor is. He's not playing every snap, but what is he, 4 sacks through 5 games in what is essentially his rookie year?
Yeah,
okay. Daryl Taylor's doing absolutely what you need, and he is outplaying his contract. I'll wait. We can be silent here for a while, long enough to trigger our silence alarm on the 710 buzzer outside this room. If we're silent for too long, there's a whole like light siren thing that goes on in here. I'll wait for the other guys on defense that are outplaying their contract. Quandre Diggs is living up to his contract. He's played well, and he's paid okay. Quandre Diggs is living up to his contract. Good for him. He's having a good season so far. If the only other name you can come up with is Alton Robinson, who's played like 7 plays this year, that doesn't work for me. Who else is outplaying their contract? Is Jordan Brooks? No. Are any of your cornerbacks? No.
No. I can't answer
anyone else on your defensive line? Al Woods has been fine. He's not outplaying his contract. He's like a veteran guy. He's doing what he's supposed to do. Is Puna Ford outplaying his contract? No. He's been good. He's been fine. He hasn't been problematic, but he's not outplaying it. And if you've got to make up for your two highest paid guys on defense not living up to their contract value, then who is going to make up for it? Quandre Diggs has been good. I'm not willing to say he's outplaying it, but Quandre Diggs has definitely been their best player on defense. Daryl Taylor, in limited time also, all right, I think has been outplaying, at least in terms of the pass rush. I don't know how he's been as a linebacker in space. I just don't know.
He also said that he hasn't played his best game yet.
Who has?
Taylor.
Well, good. I hope there's more to come.
So hopefully, the bottom of the mountain for him.
I mean, we got a texter saying, I think Cody Barton could outplay his contract if given the opportunity. I don't know. He has. He has been given opportunities. Guys have been hurt. He's been in there. He hasn't outplayed it. Why isn't Alton Robinson playing more? I don't know.
Where are you? I don't know. What you paid
is Carlos
for
Dunlap?
Yeah.
Is he outplaying
Romeo,
his contract? No.
Monet.
No.
Kerry Hyder, that everyone was
so high on. No. They're all living up to or underperforming their contracts. This is a historically bad defense. How many people could possibly be outplaying their contracts? Yeah, I'm not buying any of that, and I think it's led to an issue. It's fine to sign Bobby Wagner. It's fine to sign Jamal Adams. It's even okay if they don't play at the same elite level they did before they were signed. But you've got to have enough great young players or hits in free agency that are outplaying what you paid them in order to make up for it. And right now, you're not getting that. 8:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it's been 3 years since the Seahawks made their decision on Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, and Frank Clark. They needed to sign two of their, could sign two of the three, and they opted for the first two. Frank Clark was dealt to Kansas City. Well, yesterday, none of them were available for the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson obviously going to miss extended time with his finger injury, but a little bit of a surprise to see Bobby Wagner not practice at all yesterday. He's got a knee injury. Was described as a bruise. He did speak after practice, so hopefully he's going to be good to go. But Chris Carson, a non-participant as well. So you start looking at the biggest names on this team, and they all seem to be finding themselves on that injury report, which is not a list you want them to be on. Russell, out. Bobby, didn't practice. Chris Carson, didn't practice. DK Metcalf has had issues so far this year. Tyler Lockett had his hip issue. The biggest names on this team have all found themselves on and off the injury report over the course of the last few weeks. So just another reason why the Seahawks look at themselves right now at 2-3. And, you know, we knew depth was going to be an issue for them. We watched in the preseason and said, okay, they're not playing their starters. They're not playing well, but okay, their depth isn't going to be as good as other teams. They're going to have to remain healthy because their roster's a little top heavy. Well, they haven't remained healthy. And some of that depth has been exposed over the course of the beginning of this season, first five games. It's going to need to step up this weekend, starting with Geno Smith, but it's not just him. They need their stars to play better. Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams certainly are the two guys that I think have had the finger pointed at them the most. And they're going to need some of those other guys to start outplaying their contract. That means Jordan Brooks. That means Kerry Hyder. That means Alton Robinson, or whatever other young player you want to name. That means Carlos Dunlap. Guys who are brought in here need to start contributing, and that defense is going to need to carry things because I don't see Geno Smith lighting it up for 400 yards this week in Pittsburgh.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, it was good to take the day. Rest, reflect. I'm sure they were watching some film and, of course, traveling to Nashville, Tennessee. But the Kraken will be back on the ice tonight, making their debut on Root Sports this time. The Predators, that's who plays in Nashville, by the way. They were lit. Do you want me to do that throughout the year, like when they go to each town, mention the team name that plays there?
Maybe a little less condescending.
Like, okay,
a little patronizing.
Can you name all 32 teams?
We actually did
NHL?
This at the bar the other night.
Can
and
you
I got,
do it?
I got 30.
Okay, so you're missing a couple. Was one of them Nashville?
No, one was Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
And the other was Columbus.
Okay. It's Carolina, not Charlotte.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Carolina. Yeah, it's like, see? There it is.
The Carolina Hurricanes are the old Hartford Whalers.
And it was in Columbus.
The Columbus Blue Jackets.
Blue Jackets. I had never heard that one.
Yeah, and Columbus, yeah, that probably shouldn't exist. In any event, the Predators were led in scoring last year by a guy named Roman Yussi, but they were led in goals by none other than your boy Calido. Cali Yarncroak, who is now a Seattle Kraken, had 13 goals to tie for the lead in Nashville last year. A little curious to see who will get the start in net. Philip Grubauer, good, not great, I would say, in his first start in Vegas. Did give up 4 goals. So given that this is supposed to be a partnership and that they do play again Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, I would expect Chris Drieger to start at least 2 of those games, either Monday or Tuesday, and probably today as well. So that'll be kind of fun. Get a chance to see Drieger. His pads look sweet, by the way. He like spent a lot of time getting them like perfectly designed. They're pretty cool. Opening night of hockey on ESPN and Turner were incredibly successful. ESPN reporting huge gains in audience with their opening night doubleheader. Opening triple header a year ago was on NBC Sports, and this was a higher audience by 19%. So that is big news for ESPN. Young demo, though, 18 to 49, also up significantly, 28%. So that's great news. Kraken game peaked at over 1 million viewers, second highest for a late game opener on record. Those numbers do not include streaming views on ESPN Plus. So nice to see younger people starting to come back to the game of hockey.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, one game left to finish up the divisional round of the baseball postseason. Dodgers and Giants had never met in the playoffs before now, but they're determined to get their money's worth. Julio Urias, Logan Webb, Game 5, winner take all tonight. The winner takes on the Braves in the NLCS. Red Sox and Astros will get started tomorrow night in Houston. Meanwhile, NFL action tonight. Bucks, Eagles. Thursday night football means it's been a week since Russell was hurt. That was last Thursday night football. Practically a quarter of the way to that four-week mark, which is good. Tom Brady's team is 4-1, rolling along even without Rob Gronkowski, who will miss tonight's game. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles 2-3, but they are coming off a very nice, exciting comeback win over the Panthers. So there you go. Three things you need to know. Reminder, Jerry DePoto will join us coming up here in about 10 minutes.
You were mentioning earlier about players who have outperformed their contracts. I don't know his contract, and we didn't bring up his name, but where's Ryan Neal been in these last 2 weeks?
Well, his contract is negligible, so you know whatever he does is an advantage. He's paid the league minimum. That's a good question. That was one of the things that Pete said 2 weeks ago was part of the resurgence they had against San Francisco. I don't know whether it wasn't as good a fit against the Rams, different offensive style or different receivers, and they didn't trust him against...
I didn't look up the amount of snaps he got, so I...
Very few.
I should have done that first.
No, very few, and there were some questions about that after the game. But I think it was Corbin Smith, I think, was asking him, Pete, some questions after the game. I wanted to say Corbin Burnson. That's not his name. That's the guy from L.A. Law in Major League. Different person, but both named Corbin.
Wait, who in Major League? Who is he in Major League?
He's Dorn.
What's his name?
Corbin Burnson.
Corbin Burnson.
Yeah, before that he was, I think, Arnie on L.A. Law.
Okay.
And then he's Dorn. Get in front of the ball, Dorn.
And then
we don't need any of that. Olay.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's just Dorn. I think it's a good question. It seemed like that dime safety package was effective for them against San Francisco. So I don't know whether the Rams made some changes that didn't allow them to get into that package, but... You would sure like to see the Seahawks go back to something that worked for them. That was the best defensive game they've played. He seems like a playmaker. He seems young and hungry and somebody that's willing to do more than just the basics. So, yeah, I would love to see more Ryan Neal out there. I don't know how that works. I don't know what they need to do in order to get him out there, if it's a matchup necessarily this week against Pittsburgh, but I would hope it is. Because it was awfully successful for them against San Francisco, and I want them to do whatever they can to make this thing work. So, yeah, good question. I think it's one that we should hopefully find out more when we get to Sunday. One of the many curiosities.
Morbidly curiosity.
Yes, some of them are more morbid than others. All right, coming up next, postseason in full swing in baseball. Jerry DePoto, obviously it's got to be challenging for another general manager to watch these games, but I would imagine he's learning something while he's watching. We'll ask him about that and a whole lot more next. Mike Salk Show, Jerry DePoto up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Jerry DePoto joins us every Thursday at this time, 8:30, for the Jerry DePoto Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hi, Jerry. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, Mike. I'm traveling today, so committed to being here from the airport.
Well, thank you. That is incredibly nice of you. That means the world to us. Is it traveling for fun or for business?
Somewhere in between. I'm headed to a reunion of one of my college baseball teams to celebrate with people I haven't seen in a lot of years.
That's awesome. Where'd you go to school? Where did you play?
Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia, which cool. is not easy to get to from Seattle, I find.
I would imagine. I don't want to even know how many different flights it's going to take for you to get there. But cool. That sounds kind of awesome. Are there other guys who made the league and or still work in baseball that you'll see there?
No one that played in the big leagues, but quite a few guys that played minor league baseball. And my roommate, who is going into the Baseball Hall of Fame, is an executive with the Nationals. And my other roommate actually birthed a major leaguer. Well, I guess his wife did, Chad Pinder. His dad was one of my college roommates. And so it all comes around. We're connected 6 degrees to baseball.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, it's too bad you weren't at the ballpark yesterday. The media was there taking some batting practice, catching some fly balls. You might have found Justin. He might have been your, an
infield. That was my day.
Yeah.
That was my day.
Played a little third base at Community College in Shoreline. You might have done some good scouting yesterday, Jerry.
Well, I have to say that despite the fact I was not down on the field front and center while I was taking care of staff contracts and such up in the box, we were looking out the window
Oh, no.
And had a pretty good view of what was going on.
Yeah.
And I assessed who had game and who might be a little bit short.
Okay, good. Well, unfortunately, Angie Mentink wasn't there to show us all up this time, because that's sort of how it went the last time we were over there. You've also, I'm sure, gotten a chance to watch some of the postseason here. I think it's been great. Great baseball to watch over the course of the last week. What is it like for you to watch postseason baseball?
You know, this year, maybe more than most, it was a little sour for me the first couple of days. But like any baseball fan, you start getting involved or invested again, which I think is natural. And it's the drama of the postseason is why we do what we do. It's to get to the top of the mountain. And, you know, obviously now you've got five teams left, and they're close. They're where we want to be a year from now.
Can you find yourself watching? Do you end up with a rooting interest in one team or another as you're watching a game?
Yeah, mostly teams with whom I've worked or people with whom I've worked at this point. You know, I probably always will have a soft spot for the Mets in the National League because that was my team as a kid. But generally speaking, now just the people that you work with. And I guess on the board, quite a few people in Boston that I've worked with through the years. So I guess if I had a rooting interest, it would probably be the Red Sox. But I just want to see a great baseball game more than anything.
What'd you think of the play the other day with the right fielder kicking the ball out? I mean, the ball bounces off the wall, then the ground, then the right fielder, then goes back over the wall. Is that the rule you think they're going to have to change? Because the idea of making the runner only advance two bases just seemed wrong.
It does seem wonky, but one of those things that when it happens once in a blue moon or generationally like this, you probably don't go through a heck of a lot of brain cells trying to figure out how to change it. You just chalk it up to, wow, that was a moment. And I don't know another way you can really deal with that, because it is, you do have to limit the way players can advance in both directions, actually, because you want to avoid any type of nefarious behavior to try to adapt to a rule.
Well, that's what I was worried about, is that, you know, now that other people know about it, in theory, a right fielder or another outfielder could kick that ball or push it out of over the wall. I mean, oh, sorry, it went out of bounds. I guess you're going to have to stay at third instead of scoring, right?
I think, like so many things in baseball, and here I'm an advocate for what umpires do or have done. It's really hard to get it right 97-98% of the time, and they manage that somehow. But leaving it to their judgment in these situations, what's right, what's wrong, I think is the only logical way to handle it. Give them the authority to manage that moment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other thing I think we've seen in the postseason is just how the stars have really carried their teams. I was kind of going through the box scores yesterday morning and after watching the games, and it's like, oh, man, all of the great Astro players each had multiple RBI nights. And, you know, you had Mookie Betts and Corey Seager carrying the Dodgers, and it was Freddie Freeman hitting a home run that put the Dodgers ahead. How important are those are those great players in the postseason, and is it even heightened then compared to the regular season?
I think that's, you know, if we go back through, you know, the coffers of our mind, that's what we remember from watching baseball growing up, and, you know, the great moments for the great players. I will say that baseball has a long history of let's say the lesser knowns who rise up in October, you know, the Brian Doyles and the Buddy Biancolanas, but by and large, it's the big moments for the Reggie Jacksons and the, you know, roughly anybody who currently hits for the Astros or Dodgers. But those players, that's why they're stars, because they drive lineups at the crucial points in the season, and this is that.
Yeah, Joe Carter hitting his home run. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. A lot of the great memories of childhood baseball certainly come from that. You mentioned in your sort of postseason, end of the season wrap-up, press conference that, and I think I get your quote right, that you have your bench set. What exactly does that mean in terms of what you're looking for in the offseason?
No, I just think our bench players currently play for the Mariners. You know, one of the things that we want to make sure that we honor is, you know, through the last 3 years, we have built a really likable core of players in the big leagues. We also have a pretty robust farm system that's developing talent. And while we don't want to go into a season holding spots, so to speak, we want to put the most competitive major league team on the field that we can. We do want to provide an avenue for those young players to continue to grow and get opportunity. And And that can be seen entering through part-time roles or supporting roles rather than, you know, just waiting to see when a young player may show up. We don't want to block them from the opportunity. And that could include players currently on the team, you know, guys like a Dylan Moore or Jake Fraley, et cetera, or it could be players from the minor leagues. And we want to make sure that that's fluid and then we don't lock in or lock out those young players.
Well, and then I guess the follow-up to that or what would go with that is that means that your shopping list includes, you know, starters, right? Guys that are going to have a significant role on your team beginning in the next season.
That's the goal. And we're going out and going to search all the markets. We want to add talent. And, you know, I did mention that our priority is making our lineup longer. We want to be a more consistent offensive team than we were this past year. And, you know, as the year went along, we got better and the lineup methodically got longer. And now we would like to go ahead and add something to the middle of it, you know, or to key portions or parts of our lineup that can start driving run scoring in a different direction. And we think, you know, that, and in addition to, you know, building up some, you know, starting pitching depth is a focus for us this offseason.
You mentioned Julio Rodriguez during that press conference also, and wondering if he could end up not just on your team and contributing next year, but maybe even on an opening day start role for him. In order to get there, what does he need to do between now and then?
I mean, there's not a lot he could do on the field, frankly. He had a wonderful minor league season. He's right now about 1,000 plate appearances as a minor leaguer, which for, you know, the elite level players, that's about the time they get on the major league radar. It's sometime, you know, between 1,000 and 1,200 is when they start to pop up. Julio's in that zone, and he had a terrific Olympics. He had an outstanding season at two different levels. He'll come to major league camp with an opportunity to make the club. It's the defining decision for Julio will primarily be based on how he performs early in spring, in addition to whatever we do between now and then, because we do want to add to this team and we don't want to forsake the opportunity to get deeper. And if that happens to slow down the arrival of some players, then that's something we have to understand is part of the price of doing business this offseason. Yeah. That could affect Julio's arrival.
When you mention 1,000 plate appearances, I just happened to click over to the page for Wander Franco, who had 950 at bats. I don't see the plate appearances, but it's got to be a few more than that. And before coming up to the majors and everything he did this year, and, you know, trying to find comps for what we could end up seeing with Julio and others. How important is that international scouting element of what you guys do in building this thing? We hear so much about the draft, trades, free agency, et cetera, but that international scouting portion sure seems to yield some really impressive, important players.
Some of the best players in the world live outside the United States, many actually. And, you know, we're to the point now where I think we're north of 40% of the players in our league are not domestic born U.S. players. And we, to answer the question on scouting, we have built what I think is a really strong international scouting crew led by Frankie Thon and Kevin Fox, Andrew Herrera. They do a wonderful job, but we've realized a lot of talent from that space, including players like Julio and Nuelve Marte. And we will continue to really beat the bushes in that space. We think that is the next great frontier in scouting and player acquisition. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the potential for an international draft. So we've spent a lot of our time focusing on how we can be more prepared, you know, in the non-traditional or typical countries. You know, Dominican Republic, Venezuela are generally robust in talent, but there's a lot of talent coming out of countries like Curacao and countries in Europe and the Far East that really haven't been scouted in a thorough way. And we're trying to change the way we do that right now, actually.
Andrew Jones, Curacao, right? Wasn't he from there?
Yes. Andrew Jones, Xander Bogaerts, Shelton Simmons, Jurickson and Profar. It's really been a cascade of really good players that came after Andrew. It's a wonderful talent.
That's really cool. That's a pretty darn good list of players. So, Jerry, thank you. Let us let you go. Enjoy your reunion. Have fun, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
There you go. There's Jerry DePoto, Mariners president of baseball operations, joins us every week at 8:30. That's a pretty darn good list of players from Curacao. I remembered Andrew Jones, but yeah, Xander Bogaerts and
Semien.
Yeah, that's a bunch of pretty darn good players, all from a very small place. So cool stuff. I love talking to Jerry, and we'll do that throughout the offseason. Hear what he's up to and just have an opportunity to talk some baseball with him every week. We talk some football with John Clayton every day at 8:45. We will do that coming up in just a moment. Bobby Wagner on the injury report. What are the chances he plays? We'll ask John that question next.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
How are we today?
We'll find out. I mean, today I have DirecTV coming over to basically confirm that I've lost everything for the last 12 years. So, but they're coming at a little bit, probably at 9 o'clock.
All right. Well, we'll be done before then, I promise. Let's talk Seahawks. Bobby Wagner on the injury report, didn't practice at all yesterday. He did talk afterwards, so I'm assuming he's still likely to play this weekend?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, he's going to be battling that knee because, remember, every year right before the start of the regular season, he goes down to L.A. or San Francisco or someplace like that, has a little procedure done on the knee. It's not a surgery or anything like that. But, no, I would anticipate there's not going to be a problem. And, you know, I don't know. They said it was a knee injury that kept him out, but it wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't a veteran rest day, too.
Mm, okay. Is that the Regenikine thing that all those guys were doing? That's okay, he's in the circle. That's what Pete said.
Yeah, he's in the circle.
He's in the Regenikine circle.
Yes,
Got it. Which is different from the circle of toughness, which you complete by running the football.
Yeah.
Right.
They need to run the football.
Two different circles. We have to be clear about all of those. Just kind of buzzing around the league a little. Well, before, let me stay with the Seahawks first. Chris Carson also missing practice yesterday. Pete had made it sound really positive and then not practicing yesterday. What do you think?
They're just being extra cautious because Pete did say that he's going to have him practice most likely today. So now if he doesn't practice today, then you know there's problems. But looks like he's all set to get back on the field today. And they definitely need him because, again, this is a very good Pittsburgh defense, and they need to run the ball to make it easier on Geno Smith. And so, we'll find out later today whether he practices or doesn't practice.
Mm. I saw the news that ESPN is going to start doing Monday night playoff games.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, what they decided to do is that, to stretch it out because now you have, a wild card weekend, basically with about four games, is to stretch it out. And then what ended up happening in the past, and you'll know this because I think that you weren't back at ESPN when they started getting these games. I was.
No, I was not there then.
Yeah, but the way it worked, they get a playoff game, but they usually got the crappiest playoff game. I mean, they got like the teams that are 9-7, 8-8, and all that stuff. And now they wanted to expand the playoffs to the fact that we have a Monday game because it's so popular. And so now they had the bidding up, and ESPN, as expected, was able to win it. And so now for 5 years, they have the extra Monday night playoff game.
So they're going to be what? There'll be five playoff games on that first weekend then, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And
yeah.
So will that be a good game? Will it continue to be like, remember a few years ago it was Buffalo and Houston, I think. It was like one of the worst playoff games I'd ever watched. It was close because both teams were so bad, but it was a disaster. Will it be that game, or will the league view it as a primetime window?
I think I'm going to look at it as a primetime window. So you figure that probably the Sunday night game is going to be the best. Then the Monday night game will probably be the second best.
Mm.
And, of course, I don't know yet. We're waiting to find out what ESPN paid, but you would anticipate they paid a pretty good chunk to be able to get this. So, I think they'll end up getting the second best game as opposed to Buffalo and Houston.
Well, and I got to imagine that also that team, whoever wins that game, they can't then play Saturday the following week, right?
Absolutely.
They'll have to play Sunday?
They'll have to play Sunday. That's correct.
Yeah, that's good. Monday to Saturday would be brutal. I mean, I guess you do it. It's not that different. It's the same as Sunday to Thursday, but that just seems unfair in a playoff situation.
Yeah, that just cannot be done. So it's like they'll base it on who's in the game and all that stuff, and then have it come back on Sunday.
Anything new in the Washington football team investigation? I know everybody, there's been a lot of groups putting pressure on the NFL. Any indication they may crack here?
No. I mean, it looks like they're going to stand by what they stand by. I mean, which is, of course, ridiculous because, I mean, the only people that have been implicated in the Washington situation is John Gruden, the former Raider coach, and Adam Schefter, you know, for sending a story to...
Yeah, what did you make of the Schefter thing? I thought that was wrong. I'm surprised that that has come out. And I'm not saying that what Schefter did was right or that it's the right ethics for a journalist. I'm not necessarily defending him. But is that really what the type of stuff we want to come out of this investigation? It just seems mean-spirited.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, you know, Adam was wrong. And Adam, you know, fessed up to it that he was wrong. And because, again, you don't do that. I mean, you know, but, you know, because of all the emails that were sent to Bruce Allen, you know, that they got a hold of that email and then came back. And then now he's made the apology and accepted all the blame and everything else. But that's bad journalism. But again, how embarrassing is that? That nothing has happened to the Washington football team. You got 40 women complaining as they should. And the league is doing nothing.
Yeah, it's really well. I hope they're doing something. We're just not hearing about it. And I hope that's the case. I don't know that I have a lot of faith that would be it. John, thank you. Good luck here in a few minutes with the TV, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. John Clayton joins us every day at 8:45. Yeah, that Schefter thing kind of made me mad yesterday.
Because of what he did?
No! I mean, I'm not saying what he did was right. It's
okay.
not.
I was going to say, that doesn't seem like a thing you would defend.
That is not the kind of thing that is supposed to come out of this investigation. And to me, it's a bunch of I don't mean to get so upset about this, but it's a bunch of baloney that Adam Schefter should be taken down or made to look bad through an investigation on people that are actually doing harmful things.
It feels very, look what's going on over here
to
me.
It feels mean. It feels like somebody doesn't like Schefter and wants to burn him. Adam Schefter is not even really a journalist. His job, and it's been this way since he was at NFL Network, right? He got his thing through NFL Network. He's an information broker. He just tells people what's happening. It's like he's the person who just gets to like quickly break all the news. He's not doing deep dive investigative journalism. This isn't Dan Wetzel or... I mean, Seth Wickersham or some of the other great journalists in sports. He's just churning out all of the information for us. And you can like him or hate him. I don't really feel one way or another about Adam Schefter. I think it's an important thing for us to have, but it could be Adam Schefter or anybody else. It doesn't really matter who gives us that information. I guess I just feel like this feels mean-spirited. There is a legitimate problem in Washington with the way people were being treated. And instead, Adam Schefter and his journalism ethics about something that is not that important comes out. I'm not saying he's right. I'm just saying it feels like the wrong way to leak information. Leak something about somebody that has done something truly harmful. Not Adam Schefter. That just doesn't feel right to me. Anyway, if you want to be, can we make people feel better about this?
Like,
honestly,
please.
I want to, instead of just getting more mad, let me play you 1 minute of the best sound you will hear today. I'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.